Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Consciousness, New World. This is your host, Esperanza Ray, and today is the very anticipated interview with Akiana Kramerick. And we're going to be talking to her in just a moment, and just wanted to welcome you, Akiana, to the show. And, you know, again, before we continue, I'm just going to briefly, for the audience, if you'd like to call in to ask questions, you're welcome to use the numbers that are listed on BBS Radio under Station 1, New Consciousness, New World. I'll give you a couple, but if you need more, there you can go online and find them there. The first one is an 800 number, 888-627-6008. And the other number is 530-327-7602. So if you'd like to call in and ask a question of Akiana, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, well, Akiana, you're a child prodigy, although you're no longer a child, right?
No, I'm not, but I'm going to turn 19 in July. But I like to consider myself as still a child at heart.
Yes, it's true. It's true. To be childlike is so beautiful. Honestly, there's a joy that you can't find in other ways. So,
absolutely.
So tell me, how did this all start? I guess the best way would be to go chronologically if we can.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll try to shorten it as short as possible, but, you know, it's a long story, but it gradually started when I was 3.5 years old, and I grew up in an environment where we didn't have barely really any money and no TVs, and we lived in literally a shack where there's always, raccoon and rat manure in the basement. It was very, very poor environment where, I got, sick and with my dad and all the time. And it was very hard growing up. But my family was the best thing that ever happened to me because they were always so supportive. And it was around, I think, 4 years old where I started hearing and seeing snapshots of images of, it could be oceans or it could be just different stars, these galaxies. And like I said before, I didn't have any kind of books or radios or TV to influence the suggestedness. So when these images and these snapshots begin to move, and they start becoming visions, it was getting harder and harder for me to explain to my parents. And my vocabulary was not so expanded back then. So it was very hard for me to describe them. So I began drawing them. And since I was little, I was always a perfectionist, and I always, hid under my bed, and I used to draw and draw, and if it wasn't right, I just threw them away. And one day, my mom found a drawing in the garbage can and started, just kind of realizing something was beautiful and unique in the pictures. And as I grew, painting on the walls and on the tables with food, and then she started noticing that I should develop more. And she gave me the tools and all the supplies that I needed. And then I started developing into paints, and I started painting these experiences that I started experiencing. And then it gradually went into poetry. And at 8 years old, I painted one of the most, now one of the most famous paintings I've done. It's called Prince of Peace.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorites too. I have to say, I'm very biased to Jesus.
Oh gosh, you know, that was one of the paintings that kind of boosted my whole path. And a producer from Oprah Winfrey Show called me and invited me, and you know, ever since then, you know, my whole career, and it just kind of laid before me, and it blossomed, and it felt so beautiful that I could do what I always loved to do since I was a young girl. And then I published 2 books, and I've traveled all around the world, and I help as much as charities as I can. And now my main goal is to try to open up a artistic and creative hands-on academy like no other. So that's one of my goals that I'm trying to, it's in the works now.
The academy is a local academy, I'm assuming. It's not like online or anything, right?
Well, I'm going to try to do as more as hands-on as possible, because I think it's more of that person-to-person that creates a person. You know, it has to be that face-to-face, it has to be the actual touch of and the interaction of the person, and that makes a difference.
Okay, well, that's great. Now you're getting ahead of some of my questions, but that's fine. You just kind of gave me a summary of everything, which is good. Going back to your childhood, though, I read in an article, and maybe this is not true, because you know sometimes people misunderstand something and they write something incorrectly, but that you had the first experience, you actually met God at the age of 3, or was it 4 actually?
It was, I don't remember the exact date, but it's between 3 and a half, 4.
Okay.
And, you know, it started gradually developing, and at first, like I said, it was more of a snapshot, and then at 5, it happened when I was in my backyard, and I felt something was happening. I don't know. I felt like this white, gush of water over my eyes, and I felt like my whole body was being lifted. And record speaking, I've gone missing for 6, 6 and a half, 7 hours. And at the time, my parents were searching. The police were involved, and it was a very big thing. And I remember my body was being split into thousands of pieces, where I was going into different doors and experiencing new lives. And this being was always kind of in that corner of my eye, always there and hovering over me, as if it was almost like a tour guide. And I know it's kind of crazily speaking, but I felt like I wasn't scared.
Actually, it's not crazy what you're saying at all. You know what it's reminding me of? Mm-hmm. It's the moment where after the soul is sent to live, or incarnate, it would be a better word. Mm-hmm. It's split, and because I write a little bit about this in my book, but mine is more like I use a tree for an analogy. But you're giving a very beautiful. I really like it much better than the version that I have, because it reminds me of how the divine essence that God creates, which is the soul, splits up and incarnates in so many different dimensions that we considered past lives and things like that. So that's what it's reminding me of. It's like you're being divided into different aspects.
Yeah.
To experience your different lives. Yeah.
It is so true, because I remember I was living in a 67-year-old man, and then I was living in a 2-year-old girl's body and mind, and I was experiencing thousands of lives all at once. And you know, as a 5-year-old, it was so much for my head to handle, but I remember coming into the reality so exhausted. And like I said, you know, when I was found walking in my hallway, and I just remember wanting to sleep for like 10 to 11 hours, but it was exhausting.
So you were physically taken. It wasn't because, you know, in some experiences, people are taken and their body is left behind, but they're taken in astral projection or their divine essence is transported. But you were actually physically, your body disappeared from what we currently know.
Yes, all I remember was from my backyard going into my bedroom, and I just have no recollection of staying there in the room, because everybody, like 20 policemen, my dad could find a mouse in a field. You know, he couldn't find me, and he flipped up every kind of possible furniture. It was like inch by inch. No one found me, and I just remembered just, how to explain it, like dematerializing almost.
Yes.
Oh yeah, it was one of the most complex experiences, because I remember telling my mom while I was missing, I told her that, oh, you were talking to your mom at this and this time, and or I was just telling what the policemen were doing miles away while I was, you know, up kind of hovering in that cloud-like state. And that was the time where my mom started noticing, you know, there's something interesting, as very intriguing to what my experience was. And that's kind of started my whole entire journey, was from that point on.
It's interesting that you say that your vocabulary was not developed. In truth, though, even adults have a really hard time expressing images of that kind, because it's very hard to put into words.
Oh, yes. And there were times where I got so frustrated with my work that when it's pouring rain, I would throw them in the rain, because, you know, it was so stressful. It's something like, it's an adrenaline rush, and then you have to, if it's not there, you feel like you've messed up and you've given up. And it's that journey, that process, that's such a, it's such a journey-like experience that it's hard to understand, to explain. Yeah.
Now, in regards to your paintings, I think the first painting you sold was for $10,000.
Yes.
Is that the minimum? And then what would be the maximum?
Well, you know, at the time, you know, that was one of the biggest blessing that ever happened. But for now, as I'm getting older, there's price, you know, the original prices varies from, it could be from 5,000 to, you know, up to five figures. So it really varies upon the concept and the image.
Yes, because some of the information I read about you was saying that some of your paintings sold for $5 million.
They are priced at that, but they were not sold. But the one of that that were sold was probably around 200 to 300 thousand. So it was.
Oh yeah, it's still a lot of money for a painting. Definitely, I mean that's amazing. Yeah, and especially when you consider that you're mostly half taught. What exactly does that mean? You're mostly half, primarily self taught.
I think it's the way I could describe it is when you are in a studio for 6 hours a day, you learn a lot by experimenting, throwing away stuff and splashing against the walls, and you learn a lot. And I guess as a child, I like to figure things out on my own. But through that process, I kind of have that that notion of something is like almost like a portal, like a tube of that line of inspiration kind of always running through me, and that voice of now I like to call it God, but that light, that pure light kind of always comes through my hand, and it's always there. And that's one of the most, that's why I call it like partial self-taught, but I like to say that God also taught me.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Because my first thought was maybe that you did have some kind of instruction briefly, but it's in reality the instruction you've had is spiritual, more by the spirit itself. So that's very powerful as well. You talk about the light. Is it a specific color all the time, or does it come in different colors?
You know, it's like that that warm. Warmth of it that has a crystal and at the same time has that lava, that very like warm climate to it, but at the same time like a gold rush. I don't know how to explain it. It has, and then sometimes it has shimmers and has radiant, like you said, it radiates sometimes with a bluish color and magenta color. But it's something more of a, also of a feeling of that inner rush inside too as well.
Right, right. Now, I understand also that you became, you know, you became such an impressive, you were doing things that were, that are definitely not even anywhere close to normal by doing such paintings, and not only just the paintings, but the spiritual experience that you were having, this beautiful gift of being in the presence of, you know, God and Jesus, that you became so well known that you were on Oprah, I believe at the age of 10, is that correct? And then also at the age of 12, you were in CNN. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened and
well, you know,
what was your experience, I guess?
Oh gosh, that was one of the most, it was all these feelings mixed up together. Actually, I was 9 at the time when I was invited to Oprah's show. And, you know, as a 9-year-old, and I didn't even know who Oprah was at the time, because we still didn't have that much of that TV in the house going on. And so when people invited me to her show, I'm like, it's my first time on the plane and it's my first show. And as I'm sitting in the front row waiting my turn, you know, of course, it's like that nervousness coming up, but her presence was just like that cuddle of warmth that just makes you feel at home. And I was so happy that I got to be interviewed by her. And, you know, it was, I give actually all my life thanks to her because of what she gave in me a chance to succeed. And, you know, CNN interviewed me, I just I was so blessed because got to meet some child prodigies along the way and some very inspirational people that I admired since I was, you know, since I was 6 years old, and these singers and these, you know, just real inspirational people, these scientists, you know, these people make a person. And I was really, really, really happy that I got to meet these role models that I always admired.
Yeah, that is very beautiful story. It sounds wonderful, and obviously you deserve that kind of. I mean, because you know, it's not. I mean, you said something also. I think that's very important. The fact that your family is whether inside a Christian family or even outside, let's say other atheist families or even other denominations. People tend to believe when they hear about something, someone having those experiences, but when it comes down to someone in your own family having those experiences, it becomes a little bit scary. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes. At first, when, my parents, they came from different pathways. My dad grew up in a Catholic background, but he never ever shared anything with us. And when my mom, she came into an atheist background, because that's the whole culture of Lithuania. And she just wanted, both my parents wanted us to be grown up in a free spirited environment where we choose our own paths. Because through their point of view, I think spirituality is supposed to come from within and not taught. I think it's something that has to be come to you or grown with self-discovery. And I think that's kind of what happened when it happened to me. At first, it was a shock to her and to my father. And when they start realizing I painted some things that were in, like the Bible and some things that were actually in the Quran, because they did some studying themselves, but like I said, they never shared it with us. But when they started noticing similarities, it gave them a little bit of a skipping of the heartbeat scenario.
For clarification purposes, you're talking about your parents, and are you talking about someone else as well?
I'm talking about mostly my parents, but there were some children and some and their parents that when I came across, they did notice the same thing. But it was mostly my parents and my brothers.
But they did a little bit of research, is that it? And then some of the things that the visions you were having were representative of different denominations, right?
Yes. And when they did these research and studies, they like I said, they never showed us.
The
They didn't have
results.
exactly, but later in life, they started showing me exactly what they found out, and it was quite remarkable. It was quite remarkable.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. That's very, very interesting. Can you give us an example, for example, I guess, of some of those experiences that were more Christian oriented, or for example, from the Quran as opposed to the Bible?
Oh, I do remember some instances where I think it was at 5 and a half, where I painted of this angel, where these with these two children and crossing some sort of long bridge. And like I don't know if you're familiar with the story about a brother and sister having that faith in the Bible of crossing that the bridge with an angel guiding them, and those little things about the Noah and the whole wave, these partitions of these enormous blocks of water. And just those little things that kind of caught their eye that I had no concept of at the time.
Okay. Now, interesting, that angel that you talk about, I actually grew up with an image of it in our house when I was very little, and I love that picture of the angel hovering above the two children that are crossing a bridge that's a little bit worn out, you might say. I did not know the story behind it, but my understanding is that was supposed to indicate that we had a guardian angel. At least that's how I kind of understood it. But that would be interesting to actually read the story and understand the actual details of what that image represents. But it is a beautiful. I remember having that, and I've seen it in other homes as well. It's a very endearing portrait.
Yeah, there's actually one of the pictures of dreams where it was a teenager Jesus when I painted. That was extraordinary. It was the most challenging piece I've ever done. And he's hovering around the clouds, and there were different kinds of monuments that represent the past, the present, and the future. And there was one building that I had quite of a challenge, and I didn't know which building to do. So I just started to build this tower. And then, I don't know, something just came to me with these spheres. And I decided to paint these balls, this turquoise spheres around the building. And actually, about a year later, my dad talked with these biblical scientists where they discovered that the original building that Nebuchadnezzar built, he called it the Tower of Spheres, where he rebuilt it into a different building. But where, you know, they described that in that time, the mind capacity, the power of the mind was so grand that they were able to move things with their grandness of their mind power. And they used to build buildings with that force, with that amazing faith. And I was we were all so excited. I was so happy that I was able to represent that in such a spiritual way.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the future. It reminds me of the fifth dimension consciousness. I discuss it in my book also. And it basically does talk as to when we ascend to the fifth dimension, or when, you know, because it's been foretold in the Bible of, you know, Jesus' second coming and all that. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that in that time frame, in the fifth dimension, when we evolve and let go of all our, the word I use is crap, I guess, when we let go of all the negativity and all the things that hold us back, then we will be able to do the things that Jesus was able to do, which is walk on water, levitate, and what you were talking about with the power of the mind. And they don't talk. They use their minds, and the form of communication is called absolute knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because maybe you can identify with this, or your experience might be similar, but for example, you just not only hear, but you see, and you're able to put yourself in the person and experience it from their perspective, as well as experience from your own perspective. Mm-hmm. Which makes the conversation, the communication absolute. And it doesn't give way to miscommunication like we do in our regular verbal communication.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, you know, there was a time when I was 7 years old. I do remember, I do remember confronting with these faces and these creature-like animals with these transparent bodies. And I do remember just not saying absolutely a single word, but I had this feeling that I understood them, everything, their heart, their veins, their energy, heartbeats. And it was something that I just couldn't explain, but you explained it perfectly. But that's exactly how it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, the expression of walking in someone else's shoes comes to mind when you talk of absolute knowledge, because of that. It's like you are experiencing from their perspective. So I like that expression a lot. Now, Akiana, let me briefly repeat to the audience, for those who might not have been with us in the very beginning, we are currently interviewing on New Consciousness, New World, Akiana Kramerick. And she's considered a child prodigy in two areas, not just one, because you write, you're a poet, and you're also an artist. So we're finding out her story because the powerful experiences that Akiana has experienced, the presence of God and heaven, right? So yes. We're sharing all these beautiful experiences that she's had with you on New Consciousness, New World. So let's, going back, You say it's hard to put into words. I sometimes wonder if it's not harder to put into images, because like what you said, you have to make sure that you make everything perfect. I'm a little bit of perfectionist myself, so I can identify a little bit with what you're saying. But I mean, your pictures are so realistic that some of them don't look like paintings. They look like pictures.
So true, you know, but it takes a lot of work to have that effect. And when, like, you know, I'm not, when a person tells me what's easier for you to explain things through poetry or to paint, I think my first instinct is the best way I could express any kind of emotion is through a paints and the colors, because I think they could tell so much. I think it's another dimension. I truly believe that there is some sort of voices that are in each hue of color, and they all represent different emotions to me. But like, it takes hundreds upon hundreds of hours to complete a work, and sometimes I like to leave it a little bit abstract or impressionistic. But you know, I like to have as real as I can possibly do to show to people what I actually witnessed and seen through my eyes.
Yeah, well, they do say that a picture is worth a thousand words, so definitely. I'm sitting here as I'm talking to you, and I'm looking at the painting of the Prince of Peace, which you drew at the age, or painted at the age of 8. And I wanted to clarify, because I was reading and listening to some of your videos, and I was very touched by the fact that when you drew the Prince of Peace, and I'm wondering if this is true for all your paintings, you actually ask God to provide you a model. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is the image of you saw of the Prince of Peace, is it this person was reflecting that, or you drew a combination of what you saw and this other physical person? Because I know it has to be very hard to just paint something that's in your mind. So could you explain that a little bit to us, how it works for you?
You know, this piece, I'll tell you a little bit of how it happened. Since this phase started coming to me since I was around 4.5 years old, and I'm going to give you a visual depiction of it. It was more like if you take a picture and you put puzzles, pieces in it, and it was blurry, somewhat, but you could still see the actual that formula of the face, but the eyes stayed the same, and it had like a galaxy within a dimension within a reality. It was so, the depth of the eyes were like 10 dimensions in one. And when I wanted to depict this face at first, I didn't know if I would use sculpture, if I would use coloring pencils and put a 3D glass on top of it. I was in a battle within myself. And when I decided, I just have to do what I'm good at. So I decided to use the first time with oils, and you know, it was hard for me to sketch it out, and it took me about a month to figure the actual proportion of the face out, would I remember it. But as an artist, we thrive on the details, and I decided to just, you know, we lived in a small town at the time, and there's just a couple hundred people in the town. So, you know, you kind of know everybody, and I knew everybody, and I didn't know if they were just the right person to represent, you know, Jesus, you know, because that's a big depiction to depict. And I just one day sat on my sofa and I just kind of just threw my hands up in the air and I'm like, you know, just can you help me with to find the perfect representation? And, you know, just can you give me some sort of sign, a clue? And little did I know, after my prayers, about 3 hours later, I get a knock on the door. And it was this almost like a 7 foot tall carpenter who just happened to be in that town that day, who happened to heard from a friend that I was looking for a model. So he came and asked if, you know, who wanted to, for him to model. And he didn't expect a 8 year old to ask for a model. So it was, it was an experience for him too as well. But, you know, after much talk and conversation, he finally allowed me to use his face to portray Jesus. And a lot of sketches, a lot of photography later, I decided to paint Father Forgive Them and Prince at Peace with the combination of my memories, my imagination, and the model.
So, Akiana, if I were to walk into that town, having seen this image or with the printout of the Prince of Peace, would I be able to recognize this man because it's very close to what he looks like, or there's more of the imagination and more of the image that was in your experience?
From a normal person's eyes, I think you would be able to depict them through a crowd, through that small town. But, you know, there are some distinct features that I did change to make as close as I can to the virginal face that I pictured in my head. Like the nose had to be a little bit longer, the ears had to be longer and more distinct, more, you know, masculine, and the eyes had to be a different shade, and the hair had to be a little more curlier. But if you did walk in that town, you would definitely find that person, because there were a lot of times where people did recognize him after I completed the work and asked him for his autograph.
Well, I know that you are you self-portrait yourself in some of your paintings, and also I noticed that in some of your paintings you have your little baby brother. I especially like the one with the butterflies because I have a special memory with butterflies, a special story that that I've seen butterflies in a specific occasion. So it kind of reminds me of that. But you also have the images of, and I'm sorry, I'm going for these because I love the color blue. It's my favorite color. Aww. So mother's love and innocence, especially innocence, has these incredible blue eyes that, I mean, they look like they're alive.
Oh, trust and, me. Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, yes.
So what I was going to ask you about this, aside from the fact that the material that they're covered, the wraps in the clothes that they wear almost looks like it's alive. It looks like silk. Did you also use models for this, or was it more just from your own personal experience?
This was a very tricky piece because I did use a model initially, but I had to use another additional 7 models to complete this form.
Wow.
And at 12, it was very difficult because the blue, you know, all the artists will tell you the blue is one of the hardest colors to depict because of the thousands of different hues are inside one rip of that the silkiness of that the shawl and or like a sky. It takes so much different kinds of blues to make it right.
Perfect.
So true. But when I finally got the shawl done, the hardest part was actually not the shawl, but it was the eyes, because I didn't, like I said, seven models later, you know, you get to have that, the layerness on top of the canvas. And then one day when my lamp tipped over on the floor and then shattered one of the bulbs, I looked back up into my painting and I saw her eyes come out as if it was as if they were blinking at me. And I realized I unconsciously created some sort of effect where the paints upon paint created actual eyes that started to look into your soul. It was very, very intriguing to me as an artist too. I am unconsciously depicting that. So that was quite interesting. Quite fun.
So it creates basically depth, almost three-dimensional like then.
Oh yes. Oh yes. And that was quite nice.
Well, I have to tell you, the blues, I mean, I love all your paintings. You're obviously, everybody's drawn to a specific group more than others because of the fact that they have their own personal things going on. However, I have to say that, I mean, especially because of the way all of them are really great. They're very realistic. They, like I said, they look more like pictures than paintings. As a matter of fact, I remember looking at them on a couple of the pictures. I had to think twice because I said, oh man, this almost looks like a picture. And look at, like, is this a picture or is this a painting, you know? So it was that kind of reaction. But I have to say the blues were just, even the turquoise. You also have one with a young girl, and it's a turquoise blue, and it's also very beautiful. And one of the other things that caught my attention when you were drawing the beautiful garden, and I think in the let me see if I can find
Supreme, it. Is it Supreme Sanctuary?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. That was you have a good eye, because you know you always pick out the ones that I always have a lot of challenge on, and that was one of the that was extremely difficult because of the intensifying dimension that held beneath that, because this was the image of this supreme supreme peacefulness like heaven. It was heaven to me, and this is the sanctuary that I saw myself building and almost completing. And the colors, the flowers were so so different from the earth's, because I was able to communicate with the smells. The flowers were able to speak in different tones, and the air was so sweet that you could taste different kinds of different kinds of tastes. And it was just a dimension within a dimension. And to have that challenge of painting it on a two-dimensional canvas, you know, it was pretty challenging. And that took me about 100 and some hours to complete that. Very difficult.
Well, one of the things that caught my attention was the fact that you said that there were no blues.
Oh yeah, because there were some colors that didn't exist in that world. You know, some of the yellows didn't exist, the gold didn't exist, and there were some things there that doesn't exist here because of the transparency of the whites, of the blacks. It was quite a unique place.
So you kind of had to substitute.
Exactly.
To recreate the image that you were kind of visualizing, and it is very beautiful. So I was when I read that there are no blues, and I was like, well, she has blues in the painting. Then why is she not painting what she's seeing?
you have to use whatever's on the palette, as much as you can.
Okay. All right. So we got this wonderful, wonderful story of your life, and obviously we have a little bit longer to go still for the radio show. I wanted to say before we even get close to the end that I would love to have you on again, because I think that this is a spiritual show, and I think it would – you have so many wonderful things to share. What would you say, Kiana, for those people who don't believe in God? Because I think, in a way, your family can identify because they were there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I cannot speak for them, but I could tell them what they have went through. I think the best comment to give to the people that are debating about spirituality, I think you have to go with an open heart, without any kind of judgments and without any kind of tutorials. I think the best way to go into the pure spiritual realm is without knowing nothing. I think to become like a child again, the awareness, the curiosity has to be so pure that what it does, I think it is the key. It is the key to faith. It's the key to spirituality that we all, I'm still learning, but I think we all as a humankind, we lack that wondersome that a child has. And I'm always learning by being with children. I think they have something that we all can learn from. And now I was very happy that I got the opportunity to hold on to that idea and grasp it when I had it, and have the family that supported me when I found it. So
that's true, because like I said, in some people have problems that they consider, if you're to say to them, I can see angels, or I can do this, or I can speak to God, they would think that you're crazy because they don't believe that they can, or the society, our education, our culture has conditioned us for that. And I think the reason children have those capabilities is because they are not conditioned, and so they're able to not have as many judgments as we, when we grow up, we have. And I always enjoyed the fact that I felt like I looked at everything with childlike eyes. However, in the last few years, things have happened that have made me a little more, close-minded in the sense of being more careful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, one other thing I was going to ask you. When you're walking a spiritual path like you are, and some of our listeners, I myself try to walk a spiritual path. It's not always easy. One of the misconceptions a lot of spiritual people, and especially the perfectionists, feel that everything in their life has to be perfect. So they doubt their spirituality when they have moments of anger, frustration, and downright human reaction. Mm-hmm. What could you share with us to help us maybe understand that that those experiences are part of our spirituality? I guess my first question would be, do you have moments where you are angry, frustrated at circumstances, at people, or just in general? Or is your life perfectly in tune?
I don't think not a soul on this planet will have that perfectly in tune life, because every one of us will have challenges. And, you know, goodness gracious, I had so many. You know, there was a point that I'm still actually going through. I call it a faith stage, where there were some times where there was a blockage. A total blockage where I could not write, I could not paint, I could not think about anything else. I just had this with just a closed-minded about everything, about the world, about the reason, about the meaning of life. And, you know, there are some times where I just thought that I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to move on anymore. And I was going to wash my hands and just throw it all away. But, you know, when I started meeting with some people at some groups where I did some charity works, and I've seen so many people sharing their stories about their challenging life. And I don't know what happened, but I think by listening to their stories, I saw the world differently. I saw the world more, how to explain it, more challenging and more just twisted. I saw the good things in life 10 times more sweeter. I saw more contrasts after I kept on seeing and meeting people and hearing the stories.
Extremes.
Absolutely. And, you know, that gave me some inspiration to paint in the paintings. But even now, as I'm getting older, I see things that I have no understanding why is this going on, about the wars, about the famines, my best answer to that is I don't think there is no answer. I think it just has, I think every effect has a triple effect. And when we want to live in an environment that is sustainable and that is comforting and peaceful, my best comment on that is to start with your own self and to think about who you want to be, and then it will naturally, that natural energy will take over you and you become that person. And I decided to take one step at a time and take one positive and try to make into another positive. Right. And spirituality to me is something that you are like in a movie, that it's constantly changing and evolving. And I think you have to be in that moment where you have to make that choice, that decision, that that gut feeling, that pure gut loving feeling of that choice. And, you know, it's a step by step. Step by step. And I think no one will have the answer to the meaning of life. I think we have to bring yourself to another level. And, you know, to me, that level is trying to go through creativity and art. I think by doing art, I see things and I feel things differently, and I sympathize, and I just feel more of the earth's energy. And to me, creativity is the gateway to one of the spiritual realms.
Well, yes, because it activates your right hemisphere, which is the access to, well, and it's also the gateway to your imagination, which is the other side, the gateway to the other side. You're correct, absolutely, on that. I was also curious. But before I ask this question, I want to very quickly touch upon one of the paintings, which I found very interesting, that you painted this painting and you didn't know exactly what it was, or you thought it was something, and then a gentleman who was a scientist and he talked about quantum physics, saying that that's what you were depicting, right? So tell us about that, and then I want to ask you a little bit about your charities as well.
Oh, the quantum world, that's the painting I think that you're talking about.
Yes.
And this was quite a funny experience, because I had, when I just finished that painting, it was that process where I decided, this was the painting I decided to just close my eyes and just paint whatever forms that came to me. I didn't really concentrate on realism. I concentrated on forms. And whatever popped in my head the first, I kind of duplicated it into other places on the canvas. So that was my whole theory behind this particular image. And I had I held a tour in my gallery that very week, and there was quantum scientists in that very group. And as I was explaining some of the paintings, I see him in the corner, you know, kneeling down and just really deep in thought of this particular painting. And when all the tour was went through my gallery and they all left, he was still there and still intrigued in some of the details with his glasses on, and he was just taking notes, and I didn't understand. I didn't understand why, and I came to him, and because I like asking viewers to see. I like to hear their opinions, because they inspire me. Some of the images, and when I ask him his opinion about the quantum world, he just looked at me and he told me, oh, after 25 years of work and examination and experimentation, I have never seen a person depicting so vividly of what actually exists. It's called the quantum world. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't understand what's a quantum world, because I haven't named the painting yet. It was still unknown. And when he started telling me these shapes and these circles were string theories and the vibrations of constant sound movements, and these, you know, the M was the shape for multiple things, like the infinity, at the time I thought it was like Mary, but you know, there's lots of different variations for this specific sign for you know, the like I said before, like the infinity and the splitting of reality. And you know, as a 12-year-old, when you hear these things coming through a scientist's mind, you start to wonder if there is something going on in the atmosphere, because something was very, that changed my whole perception that day. I think he changed my life of going into deeper and more detailed thoughts. And
Akiana, I want to interrupt you, because I just got interrupted by the network. Our time is almost up. So I would love to continue talking about your paintings. I would love to continue where we left off at the quantum world. So I would like to extend the invitation at another time, which we can agree that you, if you'd like to come on the show. I mean, I don't know what your commitments are. However, if that's an option, then we'd like to do that, because I feel that there's so many more things that you could share.
Oh gosh, thank you. You know, I would absolutely love to share more, and I would love to hear more of your stories too. And I'm very honored that I was able to share what I had today on the show.
Well, thank you so much, because this was really beautiful. I still would like to ask you, obviously, questions, I'm sure. Again, we'll talk and communicate and see when you can come again on the show. And God bless you for sharing such a wonderful message when so many things in our around us are, can be sad with the economic crisis and, you know, people losing their homes and things like that. So when you have, you know, God shows us that he's there and he does care. So through people like you, that message comes across, especially so beautifully in your paintings. And I'd like to talk to you about some things that I've thought about, images that I've wanted to put into paintings as well. But we'll talk, like I said, another time. And I wanted to wish our viewers a very, very blessed week. And Akiana, you can say goodbye to the viewers. And thank you so much.
Oh, gosh. Thank you guys all for listening. And I would love to come some other time and I would love to hear more of your stories and more of your comments and questions. So thank you, Esperanza, for such a wonderful interview.
Thank you, Akiana. And goodbye, everybody. See you in 2 weeks.